There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Drop your shoulders, take a breath. Tune in to how you feel, because it's time to stretch. Hello and welcome back to a new season of Stretch Marks podcast. My name is Sinead O'Moore and I created Stretch Marks to give us all an opportunity to acknowledge the parts of life that are stretching us in all directions. Not just the physical, but the mental, emotional, hormonal, professional, financial, identity, partnership, energetic stretches we all go through. Because there is no right or wrong, there is no picture perfect, there are just a series of stretches, one after the other, that leave their mark. This episode is sponsored by Carrywell, maternity wear that makes breastfeeding and pregnancy as comfortable as possible. Carrywell is the support we need with their maternity and nursing underwear, made specifically for our growing needs before, during and after pregnancy. Embrace the stretch of motherhood confidently with Carrywell and this podcast. Joining me today is a woman, a listener I've gotten to know the last few years since connecting on Instagram. Maria Ford's journey through motherhood has been a sequence of stretches that have tested her and offered her some of the greatest loves of her life. I mean, we're talking about severe hyperemesis, the type that left her hospitalized for most of her third pregnancy. A very rare condition leading to emergency airway surgery, an emergency section, a newborn in NICU with a collapsed lung, meningitis, her uterus at risk of rupture, miscarriage. And this is all in the last 5 years, while also showing up, living life, working, mothering, coping with whatever life throws next. All the while, deeply grateful, with a resounding, I would do it again for the children I'm so fortunate to have. Women are incredible. This story of immense stretch is proof alone of that. Maria, thank you so much for joining me on Stretch Marks podcast. I'm not entirely sure. You're so welcome. I'm not entirely sure how we connected or when we connected. Probably around
during the pandemic.
Yeah, probably.
I know you had a podcast on high premises and I reached out to you. Yeah. And I reached out to you and I was like, thank you so much for featuring it.
I couldn't remember. All I know is like we were kind of both in that pandemic baby bubble.
Yeah. Oh, we were in the thick of it. Yeah.
Do we call it a bubble? Do we call it a storm? I'm not sure.
Storm.
Storm. And I have kind of followed along ever since and become more and more and more aware, I suppose, of the specific stretches that you have been going through. I asked you in preparation for this conversation to kind of collect them for me, mainly because I was like, I don't think I actually, I'm sure I'm missing one or two, because I have just felt from an outsider's perspective looking in that you have this wonderful smile and full of life and happiness and your kids. And anytime I would get a DM from you, it would actually be
the opposite.
Yeah. 2 a.m. in Temple Street, you know, or I've been in hospital for months and I'm kind of like, what?
I know. I tend to kind of put the highlights up on my Instagram, but like my friends and family obviously know the backstory. yeah.
And yeah. The backstory, I suppose, is a large tale of hyperemesis, but also of NICU and, you know, a lot of, I suppose, the things that we hope will never happen sometimes happening.
Yeah, totally.
Take us back to, I suppose, day one with Holly. And as you said, you know, more of a straightforward one, but definitely your first experience of hyperemesis.
Totally straightforward. At the time, I didn't realize that. Do you know, your first baby and you're like a new mom. And but Holly was like, everything went straightforward. I had hyperemesis with Holly, but not as severe as I did with Daniel and James. I guess it was my first experience of it, but I didn't realize what a privilege it was to like bring a baby home who was well. You know, like I was in the throes of early motherhood. Holly, everything was amazing, straightforward. Yeah.
You got pregnant quite quickly then, Daniel.
Yeah. I gave birth to Daniel in May 2020 and Holly was 18 months. I didn't expect it to be so hard the second time around. I kind of thought it would be like the first pregnancy, but it wasn't at all. It really ramped up. I was in hospital a lot.
And admitted and treated for how long were you in hospital for?
Oh, a long time. And I attended day ward like 2-3 times a week for hyperemesis. And I have to say I was in Holly Street, so they were amazing. They were so good. But yeah, like it got to the stage where I couldn't go nearly 24 hours without having to get an IV drip. So because I was so dehydrated.
Just very life debilitating.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard, like hard on my family, like my husband and everything like that. With another kid at home, like, yeah.
And I suppose for most women in this position, you're counting down the days to that birth and to have baby arrive just to get that relief.
And for everything to be okay. Like I worried, like any mother worries during their pregnancy, but like when you have hyperemesis that is so severe that like you can't even keep down water, you know, like you can't eat, you can't keep down your prenatal vitamins, you know, like it is such an anxiety because you worry so much about the baby that you're growing, you know, and I worried so much about Daniel.
Things didn't go so smoothly when Daniel was born.
No. It was like my fears came true. So Daniel was born with a birth defect called laryngomalacia, which is quite a common birth defect. But only 2% of people who are born with it are severe. And Daniel, of course, fell into the 2%. Mm-hmm. So he required airway surgery when he was 2 weeks old.
Which I should say was in May 2020.
Yeah. So I was totally on my own. Like the day that he went in for surgery and my husband wasn't let in and he was just standing outside the reception of Crumlin and it was awful. Like handing over your newborn to a surgeon on your own. Yeah, it was really difficult.
After having such an isolating time in pregnancy as it was.
Yeah.
You know, you're ready for that reunification. You're ready for that moment where you bring him home. I certainly remember in my lockdown pregnancy, the only relief came bringing her home felt like, okay, we're coming back into safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you were beginning this process. How did that surgery go?
The surgery went well. But Daniel had like a lot of extra issues, like so he aspirated when he fed, so he had to be NG tube fed, and that was so difficult because we had to be trained how to basically place a tube down your newborn.
Mm-hmm.
Not natural as a mother, you know, like you're taking on a nurse's role, and that was really difficult.
At a time when you also have an 18-month-old and no childcare and no family and friends to come in and support, because of course the village is locked away.
Oh, totally away. Like, it was myself and Niall, who's my husband. And so Daniel was in Crumlin for weeks, and Niall wasn't allowed to come in, so I stayed in every night with him. But I'd come home to like give Holly her bath, you know, and then I'd go back in. And it really was challenging. It just is a weird place to be, lying on like pull out chair with your newborn, and you don't know if he's okay or not, do you know? So yeah, it was really hard.
Were you given much information at the time about what this means for his life?
Yeah, like a lot of consultants came into me and they were like, you know, by the time he's two, he's kind of like, he presented like a prem baby.
Yeah.
And they were like, by the time he's two, he will have kind of grown out of this. So basically, like what Daniel was born with was basically like his airway was covered. So he couldn't breathe. And I'm very lucky. Like I had brought him home from the hospital, and like he didn't cry when he was born or anything like that, because he just didn't have that capacity, you know, in his airways. And I'm very lucky. One of my best friends is a GP, and Daniel had like severe stridor, which is like a really high pitched squeak, basically. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to breathe. And I rang her and she was like, get in the car, go to Crumlin.
Mm.
And I did. And like, God, I was so naive. Like I had about two nappies with me. Do you know, I didn't think we were going to be in it for the long haul. And we were. And yeah, I just didn't picture kind of like that being my story after having my second baby. Do you know that kind of way? Like I was so happy when he was born and I was like, everything's fine. And then it really wasn't, you know?
How did you, looking back, I'm sure there was a bit of fight or flight at the time and just the kind of the cortisol brings you through, but was there a time thereafter where you could reflect and say that that was a huge stretch and it left its mark on me?
100%. 100%. I think I was in fight or flight for about 2 years. Like, I only feel like I'm coming out of it now, that I'm taking my shoulders down from my ears. I never believed when the consultant said to me that, like, you know, by the time he's two, he's going to be better, and you know, that kind of way. And they were right. But when you've a newborn, two seems a long time away. Mm-hmm. You know, and especially when it's something like they stop breathing, they do you know, like yeah. And winter 2021 was very difficult. Like Daniel, between September to March, spent most of it in Crumlin Hospital. He'd require oxygen, he'd turn blue, he like total fight or flight mode for all of it.
Which of course means that if he was in hospital, you're in hospital.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're away from your other daughter.
Yeah.
And the mum guilt.
Oh God, the mum guilt. In. Yeah. Yeah. It really did. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you feel that there was even a time where you could return to work, or like that this would find a natural, normal rhythm again?
I returned to work 6 months after I had Daniel, which maybe was a bit premature. Because that's when he was so sick. And God love my boss. I'd be texting him every second week, being like, hey, we're in Crumlin again, you know. And that was like January 2021. So still kind of pandemic time. Yeah, I just felt like I was constantly only leaving the house to go to Crumlin, like.
And then you got pregnant again.
No, am I mad? yeah, I did, with James, who is turning one next week. He's a wee dote.
Hyperemesis again?
Severe.
So tell us about that. So and how was Daniel at this point? Was Daniel still in and out of Crumlin?
No, he was doing better at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, so yeah, very severe hyperemesis. So like with hyperemesis, it actually gets worse per pregnancy. Do you know, like it ramps up. I was so sick. Like I was literally in hospital Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night I had to stay over because day ward isn't open on the weekend, but I'd end up so dehydrated that I'd have to stay over like to get fluids, which is really hard. I had two very young babies at home. Yeah, I was really sick for like literally from I took the pregnancy test up until like I was in labor with James, and I was still receiving like IV anti-sickness drips to stop the sickness.
Was there a point where you felt like your body like just actually could not do it?
Oh, often. Yeah. It's such an isolating place to be. Like morning sickness is bad, right? Mm-hmm. And it's debilitating, do you know, but I can't even describe what hyperemesis is like. Like it feels like living in a lockdown that you don't, like you can't do anything. You can't function. You can't parent, do you know, like you're just so sick. And so I was on 5 anti-sickness medications a day, but in total like was 15 tablets, and I still was sick like 20 times a day. And I was like to my consultant, should I come off them? And she was like, no, because the difference is like you'll be sick 20 times or 50 times. you know, and yeah, like it's so lonely. It's so hard to explain. And it goes against like your natural instinct as a mother, you know, like you're like, I'm not providing for my baby. Okay. You know, that kind of way. So yeah, it's really difficult, really difficult.
How did you feel when you found out you were pregnant with your third baby though? Did in that moment where, you know, after everything that you had just gone through with Daniel.
Yeah.
To now feel like you had it in you to.
I know. To like it's again. A bit like approaching it like a marathon. Yeah. In my head, anyway. I know I talked to other women who are in day warden, they're like, I'd never do it again. I was delighted to be pregnant with James. And in one way, because my experience with Daniel was so difficult, I thought that my next experience would be a bit healing. It was planned, you know, like, and we knew what was ahead of us. Like, I didn't go into it like...
Mm. It's so brave. I really mean that because, look, there's been an awful lot of conversations here in my house about a third, hence getting a dog. And I'd have not had your experience, okay? I brought two babies home without experience of NICU and surgery at such a young age or hyperemesis. And even I'm like, I don't think I have it in the tank.
I know. Yeah.
You know, so it is brave. To say, and I mean it like slightly incredible for me to see you be like, I can do that again because I want that family.
Yeah. I always said to Niall, my husband, like I know it's a cliche to be like, oh, you know, like it's worth it, but it actually was. I'd never look at like Holly, Daniel and James and say, God, I wish I didn't do those 9 months, because they were hard, but what I have is incredible. Like, do you know, like they're amazing kids and they're busy, but I would do it all over again.
And we haven't even got to James's birth yet.
As I said, I guess when I was pregnant with James, I was like, okay. I knew I'd have severe hyperemesis. But I was like so looking forward to having the newborn stage, you know? Like, because I didn't have that with Daniel.
Yeah, it was kind of robbed from you.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was so looking forward to it. And then I was induced with James because of my hyperemesis and he wasn't moving so much. So they were like, okay, we just need to induce you. And I had two natural births before James. So... I went in, I was like, I can't wait for this. I was like, this is going to be a breeze.
Mm.
It wasn't a breeze. It actually is probably the birth that shook me the most, which is kind of unheard of on your third, you know? I ended up in an emergency section due to... James was stuck and my uterus was about to rupture. And the outcome from that isn't great for baby or mom.
No. No. Nobody wants a ruptured uterus.
No.
So in that moment, it's an easy decision. Straight to
that. My consultant was amazing. Now, she's been my consultant the whole time. she was amazing, and like she made the decision right on time. She was amazing. But James got taken away to NICU straight away. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, do you know, like, how do I have another baby who is sick? Like, and so he got taken to NICU. And by the time, because I was recovering from the section, and by the time that I was allowed down to him, he had been moved to ICU. And they were really worried about him. And I was like, how is this happening again? You know, like, yeah. That was really difficult. I couldn't believe it. So James, sorry to explain, James was born with a collapsed lung. But it was so severe that it was compressing his other organs. So that's how he ended up in ICU.
Is that something that happened? Did it collapse in birth?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So he was okay up until that point?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Unlike Daniel.
In my head, obviously, I was like, is he like Daniel? Do you know?
Yeah.
Like,
but it was a different thing. So Daniel was born anyway with his condition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas this was almost like an injury in birth.
From birth, yeah.
So what did that mean? What does it mean to have a newborn with a collapsed lung?
It's very difficult. I was in the room, like in the maternity hospital, like on my own without a child. Oh, it was awful. Like it really was like, I just was like, the outcome isn't going to be good. You know, like I'm a very positive person, but at that time, like, and you know, I was so newly postpartum. I was like,
well, so I'd say your nervous system had been frayed.
Oh, at this point. Totally. Yeah.
At this point, there was no more.
Yeah.
There was no
I
more.
Went down to ICU, and the doctor was like, you know, it's quite severe, his like collapsed lung. And they were like, we're really worried about him. And I was just like, I was so worried. But in fairness, James turned a corner very quickly. So yeah, that was great.
How long, when did you get to take him home?
Oh, he was only in ICU for like 5 nights or something. Like,
wow.
So we got to bring him home. Yeah. Yeah. And like we got to bring him home, and then he got checkups and stuff like that. But then James ended up with meningitis at about 2 weeks old.
Can you see now why every time I've ended up on a DM with you, it was just something. I just couldn't believe it.
I know. No, neither could I. But he was fine. But obviously he was a bit compromised because he had a collapsed lung.
Yeah. And how and where did the meningitis come from?
I don't know. He had been in the day before to Holly Street for like an x-ray to just see how his lungs were doing. And the next day we were at home and I was like, he feels really hot.
Yeah.
You know, like temperature. Mm-hmm. And again, I rang my absolutely lovely friend, Niamh, who's a GP. And I was like, James has the temperature. What do I do? Because you can't give like palmoneurfin to like a 2-week old. She was like, okay, rule of thumb is bring them into hospital if they've a temperature. And so I did. And then they did the lumbar puncture on him. And I was like, oh, that's precaution.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But yeah, I came back. Yeah, he'd meningitis and he was on oxygen and IV antibiotics that week. Yeah. And so I just could not believe that I was back in Crumlin on the same ward with a baby that looked exactly the same as Daniel.
Yeah.
You know?
And here you are again.
Yeah.
So he's 2 weeks old. He's already had his collapsed lung, his ICU, mm-hmm. and now meningitis. And of course, he has no vaccines at this point. So no, his little body is defenseless.
Yeah.
How are you not breaking down at this point?
Oh, I think I was. do you know what? I remember bringing Daniel home. And Daniel was ongoing sick.
Yeah.
And I remember the consultant said to me, it's very difficult to bring a sick child home.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going home, but you're also caring for them. Like as I was with Daniel, with tube feeding and all of that. And with James, like, okay, meningitis, like it's, you know, it's hard. But at the same time, I was like, he's treated.
Mm.
He's got his antibiotics. He's got whatever he needs. And I'm bringing home like a healthy child, do you know?
Like once he's better.
Yeah.
He's home.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when you come in with an infection to hospital or like a child goes in, they come home. Okay.
Mm.
Daniel was different because like Daniel's still under the care of Crumlin. Mm. Like, do you know what I mean? Like he was ongoing.
But isn't it very funny, I think, how if you had had James and that experience of, okay, so he's had an injury at birth.
Yeah.
And now he has this meningitis, which can be treated and it's not an ongoing illness. But if you had experienced that before Daniel, before the experience of...
Oh, it would have been so traumatic.
But our capacity just keeps growing and growing and growing. Like you were able to look at that and actually find some deep positives.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I find that fascinating. I honestly do. Because, you know, even take it back further. If that had happened on your first baby.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I can't even imagine.
It's these things, I don't know, that we expect to break us. Somehow they, I don't mean to harp on about the name of the podcast, but it is true. It completely stretches.
Yeah. No, it does stretch
capacity.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Like, yeah. Like, I feel like I was so naive before all of this.
Yeah.
But I wasn't. I was just living a charmed life, you know.
But you should never live expecting that all of these, like the sequence of these events.
I know the circumstances are kind of rare, you know, like all of them are quite, all the situations are quite common together. Like, or not together. They're quite common, do you know, like high premises.
Yeah.
Do you know?
You're not meant to have them all.
No. No.
In the space of 3 years, 4 years?
Yeah, 4 years. Yeah. So my eldest, Holly, is 5. Yeah. Yeah.
But even from Daniel, I suppose, if we even to take it from
oh, yeah. Daniel's
from Daniel to James. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And throughout this, your mum wasn't well.
Yeah. So in August 2020, just as Daniel was eventually getting out of Crumlin, mum was going into St. James's Hospital And she was diagnosed with stage 3 ovarian cancer. So, yeah, now she's doing well now. But that was like very difficult, because I'd lean on her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it was during the pandemic where you couldn't see grandparents anyway.
Yeah. You know? It's just another layer of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. And another layer of like, and I don't mean to harp on about it, but like all of my experience with like Daniel and stuff like that was in a hospital on my own.
Mm.
Like my husband couldn't come in when he got airway surgery. He couldn't come in and visit him when he was in ICU, do you know? And then mum was in hospital on her own and we couldn't go into her, do you know? So it was, yeah, it was a lot, do you know?
Okay, here's a stretch we don't talk enough about. Over 70% of pregnant women suffer from back pain during their pregnancy. And often we are not educated on how to minimize this and protect our growing bodies. Carrywell created its support belts to address this common issue by reducing the risk of muscle strain and alleviating existing discomfort or pain. These belts gently lift the weight off the pelvis, providing support to the lower back. They are discreet, warm, and designed to adapt and grow with you throughout your pregnancy. With Carrywell's maternity supports, the focus is on empowering you throughout your pregnancy journey, rather than just putting up with the aches and pains of the pregnancy stretch. Carrywell's products are not just reactive, they are crafted to proactively prevent discomfort, ensuring a more comfortable and enjoyable pregnancy experience right from the beginning. Embrace support without compromise and make your pregnancy journey as comfortable as possible with Carrywell. Available to buy now on cleverclogs.ie and check out your nearest stockist.
Did you feel at any point, I mean, that meningitis was only 11 months ago?
Yeah.
That had happened?
Mm-hmm.
So that's relatively recent.
Mm-hmm.
In the grand scheme of like, Juliet had, you know, she had something quite frightening. And I think it was,
I remember.
Yeah.
Temple Street.
It was 2 years ago. I'm still not right.
She
had a
seizure, did she?
She had a seizure. They couldn't, they couldn't sign off on it because there was no temperature. So, oh, yeah. So, it led to, now she's like, by all accounts, she's fine. I have another appointment this month, but by all accounts, I think she's fine. But like, I'm like, I can, if I choose to stay awake at night, I can just dip into that little chapter of my brain and yeah. I can live there for
it's
a little
really
while.
Hard. So Daniel had an absent seizure when he was one in creche, and literally like his teacher was like, I thought he was dead.
Mm.
Like it's, you know, you're living off your nerves.
And like, I think this is the thing, like as mothers, we do live off our nerves and yet we are still expected. You know, when you say that you went back to work at 6 months. Yeah. You know, it's, I'm in awe. And this is what I mean as well. Like when I, you know, when I wanted to have you on the podcast because I mean this, it's like, I would see, and not to say that you would be very, like posting and sharing a lot of things, you know what I mean? But yet, if I was to see something and be like, oh, they're having a nice family day out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then I'd be like, you know, how are you? And you'd be like, oh my God.
Literally the opposite from like running around the park.
But it's this thing, and in your case, I don't feel, I'm not coming at this from a like Instagram versus reality perspective, because you're not out there trying to be an influencer and kind of sell a particular lifestyle or anything. But what I mean by it is, we still have to play the role of family.
Oh, totally. Yeah. And that's really hard.
Yeah. You still have to show up.
I don't know, but I found like Christmas really hard.
Yeah.
Do you know, like it's just was like straight into it. Like you still have to get on with it every day and then work and juggle it all. Like it's a lot.
When or do you or have you, how do you care for yourself then? Because like that nervous system must be in flames.
Through the roof. I have great friends and family. My sister in particular is so, she's the opposite to me. But like, she has four kids and she's amazing, but I have great friends that I kind of bounce off, do you know, that kind of way. And I guess like so cliche, but I leaned into like sea swimming and going for runs and stuff like that. So
it's not cliche though. I think it's okay to bring it back to actually what nature has given us.
Yeah.
You know, like I do think that the medicine is there.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated.
No.
It doesn't have to be complicated or expensive or in Nepal. Like it can just be outside your front door.
Oh, totally. Like I remember one of my really good friends, like, and I never was into sea swimming, but one of my really good friends during the pandemic was like, hey, do you want to come join us? And I did. And it was so good for me. But like everything is so, I'm jinxing it now, but like my three kids are amazing. They're all healthy. You know, like obviously they get their usual creche colds or whatever. And if I had a crystal ball, you know, a few years ago and was told that this would be the situation, I would have grabbed it with both hands. So I'm so lucky, you know, I really am. And like there's people so worse off, you know. Yeah, it just has been a bit of a roller coaster, I guess.
There was one final thing.
Yeah.
So you weren't, the story didn't end there.
No.
Tell us about our most recent DMs.
So in, was it September? I found out I was pregnant again. Bit of a surprise pregnancy. Which I know people are like, on your fourth, are you sure?
Do we need to get the book out? Listen, so, I'm just impressed that sex could even be happening with that many kids and nervous system dysregulation, to be honest.
It definitely was a big surprise. And then I was like, here we go again. Mm-hmm. And I was.
How did your husband? Can I just say? Because if I had gone through that and was about to, you know, abandon ship for 9 months by spending that amount, like, I have a very supportive partner, but he would be like, I can't do this without you.
I know. So I told him on his birthday, and he's like, how are we going to do this? And I was like, I don't know, but like, put the head down, we'll be fine. Both myself and Niall are like from big families, so I guess we always kind of wanted big family ourselves. So although it was a surprise, we were like, okay, we'll go for it. And yeah, straight away, I was in day ward, all of that. I had my first scan. Everything was fine. And then I had my second scan and there was no heartbeat. And that was in November, just gone. So not that long ago. Yeah. And that hit me like a ton of bricks. Yeah, it really did. Like, I guess I feel like I've spent the last few years kind of like in survival mode, like keeping my children alive, keeping me alive and all of that. And then to be like told there's no heartbeat. It was like my worst fear come true.
So with every, you know, especially with the two boys and that moment in labor when you needed your emergency section and everything, like risk was always kind of around the corner, but you'd beaten it every time.
Yeah. And this time
it was a total surprise. It's like,
yeah. And I went in and had a DNC 2 days after the scan with my surgeon. And I totally underestimated how I'd feel after it, you know, like even the postpartum, like hormones and everything like that. Like, yeah, that's when everything kind of hit me.
I can understand why, you know, I'm sure it was all just under the surface. It probably didn't need much.
No.
But the loss of a child, and when, as you said, all you've been doing is keeping them safe and alive for all of this time.
Yeah.
That's, I think it's really important to talk about that. It doesn't matter that it's your fourth. It doesn't matter that you've got three at home.
I know.
It doesn't matter that it was a surprise that actually...
I know. So a bit of me was like, oh God, it was a surprise. Like maybe it wasn't meant to be, do you know, that kind of way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it doesn't matter what stage it comes at. It is such a grief, you know. Yeah. And it's hard because you want to take to the bed, but you can't. You have three kids, you know. Yeah, that's what I found hard.
Life, you have to show up again and again and again for mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Like, when do we get to break down in the corner?
When do we get to, like, have a bit of downtime?
Yeah.
And even as my consultant said to me, the morning that I was in for the DNC, she was like, you've literally... been in every corner of Holles Street.
Mm.
She was like, there's no place that you haven't been in, you know, like, yeah. So yeah, but it was a really sad way to leave Holles Street, you know, like it was, but also, I don't know, physically, could I have gone through that again for 9 months? But yeah,
it's still nice to wrap up this chapter of motherhood kind of on a high. Something that I've spoken to recently with a friend, that it's like so much of our life is building towards this chapter, and it is only a chapter, but yet so much of our cultural kind of norms is around, you know, like from the moment you are a child yourself, you know, you've got your baby doll and you're pretending to be mother, and you're imagining, you know, okay, what's going to it feel like when I find out I'm pregnant for the first time, and all of these things. That there's something kind of sad about the ending of that chapter.
Yeah.
And moving out of that zone.
Totally. Like, I totally agree with that, you know, but then I'm so lucky.
Mm.
Like, I really am. Like, as I said, like, if someone had of told me, like, here's your three kids, they're healthy, they're mad, but like, I couldn't have wished for more. I'm so lucky. And in one way, like anything that I've been through, which pales in comparison to like other parents' experience, but like anything that I've been through has really given me perspective. Do you know, like, okay, I was on the wards with Daniel in Crumlin, but I saw a lot worse than what my situation was. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually very grateful that I am where I am now, to realize what a privilege it is to have a healthy family, have healthy children. You know, like, not everyone is given that privilege, you know, and I feel so lucky. I really do. It was a bit of a bumpy road, but I wouldn't change it for the world to have the three of them, and they're amazing. They're all 100% now. And yeah.
I suppose it's a lesson for us all in that no matter what we're experiencing, there is a glimmer.
Oh, there totally is a glimmer.
There is a light.
There is a light. And if your bar is low, like, yeah. Go for it. Do you know, like, I guess I probably use humor a bit, like, in dark times. But, like, stay positive, do you know? And that's not easy. That's not easy. Like, there's people going through way worse than I ever went through. But yeah, as I say, I feel like very fortunate.
It's an extraordinary, example of how life continues to stretch us. And just when we think that one chapter, one season is bringing a sense of calm and completion, there is always something more to give, and we just don't know where it's going to come from next. We don't know, is it coming left or right? Our hypervigilance is sometimes completely wasted upon us because life has a plan. But it is important to acknowledge and to recognize that they are not easy things to experience. They come with all manner of long-term chronic stress,
of course,
related injuries, both psychological, emotional, hormonal, and physical. And it's okay to say that you're still grateful and that it was really hard.
Yeah. I think now I'm at a point where before I used to be very much like, oh, be grand, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas I think only now, like when you asked me to do the podcast, I couldn't have done it like a year, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
When I was in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know if it would be grand, you know, but I very much kind of like, that's the way I project myself to like everyone. I'm like, oh no, be grand. But I think now, I still have that mentality that it will be grand, but at the same time, I have no problem admitting that it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before I wouldn't have, like, I'd be like, oh no, get on with yourself, you know, mm-hmm. like, but it was hard. All of it was hard.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever count up the amount of nights in hospital?
I don't think I could possibly, between Holly Street and Crumlin. God.
There's an exercise for you now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'd say substantial. I'd say huge. But the
amount. Oh my God, huge amount. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
But yeah. It might be worthwhile so that you can with evidence based, say, I like that was hard because
I know
And you don't have to always minimize it and deflect and use comedy to kind of be like, oh, it'll be grand.
I know.
You know?
So me, though.
Like, it was also this. This is the truth. Yeah. This is the amount of nights that I spent in hospital, either for my trying to keep my own child alive while I was pregnant with them, or thereafter.
Trying to keep them alive.
Yeah, when they were born.
Yeah.
You know? And that's a really stressful place to be.
I was so absolutely honored to be asked by you to come on your podcast, because as I say, I do minimize it, but like,
it's a lot.
I'm thankful to say that, like, we've come out the other end, but it was hard, and there's no point in pretending that it wasn't, you know. And like, yeah, there is worse that could happen, but, you know.
It did still happen. It happened to you and to your family.
Yeah.
You got through it. And
yeah,
I'm in awe. I have no idea how you got through all that in such quick succession. Like, just boom, boom, boom. One thing after the other like that. And I think it's important to acknowledge the impact that hyperemesis has, not just on the individual, but on the wider family.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing, if I can get across today, that, like, you know, hyperemesis is, it's so debilitating. But also for the partner, and maybe if you don't have other kids at home or whatever, but if you do, it's such an undertaking. It really is. Like, yeah, no, it's so difficult and isolating.
Even with all of that medication.
Yeah. And all that help and assistance. Mm. But like, yeah, no, it's a really difficult journey.
Thank you for sharing it with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much. It was lovely to talk to you.
Lovely to talk to you. And I do mean this. I think that you know, you're an absolute star for everything that you've gone through, but you don't have to put your brave face on all the time.
I know.
And, you know, November wasn't that long ago. So
yeah,
continue to support yourself as best you can.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Maria Ford. I really believe in sharing unique experiences, regardless of whether the guest is well known. We all have a story, and so I hope with your support, shares, listens, and reviews, I can continue to do more like this. Reach out to me at StretchMarksPod and with this week's guest, at Maria D. Ford on Instagram. Talk to you again next week.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.